Will your church be one of the issues, etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300. Everybody notices that this is happening. They've noticed it for decades now. That at a certain age, kids who had been in church, youth group, youth ministry, you name it, and more lately, not so much in church, but in youth group, leave. They don't come back. As soon as they are not required to come back, they don't come back. And guess what? In the old days, we might have assumed if they go away as youth, when they get older, they'll come back just like we did. I wonder, is that assumption that when they get old, they'll come back still true of this generation of young adults? Joining us to talk about young adults and their exodus from the church, Drew Dick. He's managing editor of Leadership Journal, published in Carroll Stream, Illinois, author of the book Generation X Christian, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Faith, and How to Bring Them Back. Drew, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm thrilled to be here.
In the past with young people, we could always assume that they're going to get older, and if they get older, they will return to the life of the church. You say that we can't necessarily make that assumption any longer, especially about the new young adult. Why?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because in the past, we have seen people leave the church, even their faith, in their late teens, early 20s. And if you are going to do that, that's probably when it's going to happen, because you're kind of leaving home, going off to college and into the work world. But when they have, the theory goes, when they have kids or settle down, establish careers, hit some of those adulthood milestones, then they'll be led to come back to the church. And I think we've seen that happen a lot, especially with the baby boomers. Many left in the 60s and 70s. Only to return later. However, there are some reasons why I'm not banking on an automatic return for this generation. And I'll just walk you through them really quickly. The first reason is they're leaving at a greater rate than the generations of yesteryear. Some scholars say as high as 4 to 5 times the rate they're leaving. So a comparison to their parents' generations may be a sort of apples to oranges type comparison. Second, and this is a big one, young adulthood is not what it used to be. For one, it's much longer, and there have been a lot of articles on this, a lot of consternation from parents about this. We have young people delaying a marriage, having kids, being autonomous financially, going out on their own. They're delaying those type of milestones into the late 20s, even early 30s. I'm in my early 30s, and I have friends that are still sleeping in their parents' basements. And what that does, whether you think that's a good trend or a bad trend, what it does is it takes away some of those sociological drivers back to religious involvement. Because, yes, having kids does tend to make people more likely to bring those kids to church and that type of thing. So here's what I'm thinking is that, in the past, if someone waited a year or two to get married and start having kids. Being away from the church for a year or two is one thing. Being away for a decade or more makes a return considerably more unlikely, in my opinion. And third, this is maybe not news to anyone who's been paying attention, but there's been a tectonic shift in the culture, I believe. Whereas past generations may have rebelled for a season, they still inhabited this largely Judeo-Christian culture. But for this generation, the 20-somethings right now, maybe really the first generation that's been raised in pluralistic post-Christian America, that cultural gravity back to the church, back to faith, has weakened, or maybe in some cases dissipated altogether. So, I don't want to be a doomsayer, and yet at the same time, I want to guard against complacency and just kind of having this lackadaisical attitude about the trend. As a Christian, obviously, I'm very concerned about it. And I'm encouraging parents and friends of people who've walked away from their faith and pastors who are alert to this trend and obviously concerned about it. Don't wait on the sidelines. Don't rest on your laurels. Get out there and engage these people and try to bring them back into the church and ultimately back into the family of God.
An attendant problem seems to be biblical illiteracy, but even beyond that, can we assume that even the young adult who had been raised in the church necessarily today has even a bare Christian worldview?
Great point. And the answer is, I don't think we can assume that at all. And, you know, this is a complicated problem, but I recently heard a professor at a Christian college say that when he asked his freshman students about basic Christian doctrines, 95% of them answered in classical heresies. So we're doing a very poor job of teaching our kids in the church even basic doctrine, basic facts about the Bible. And when we fail to do that, they have a very vulnerable faith. They're very vulnerable to defection when they go off to college or into the work world. And, you know, part of this is a way in which we've changed our methods when it comes to youth ministry. You know, historically, the youth ministry movement was a biblical education movement. And somewhere along the way, I don't know, going back maybe 20 or 30 years, when business thinking really started to impact the church, we kind of shifted the emphasis to an entertainment model where the goal became, let's get as many kids as we can through the doors on a Friday night and keep them entertained. Well, that's had some ugly unintended consequences. And, you know, church researcher Ed Stetzer describes most youth groups in this country as holding tanks with pizza. And I'm afraid that's an accurate description of many of them. You know, they're having a great time. One of the things when I was researching for my book and what I did was I tracked down dozens of 20-somethings that had walked away from their Christian faith. And one thing really surprised me, almost to a person. They had great things to say about youth group, about their youth pastors, and yet these were the same kids that would walk away a few years later from the faith altogether. And it was confusing to me, and I remember talking to a youth pastor friend of mine, and I said, how can this be? And he said to me, and I'll never forget, he said, let's face it, there are a lot more fun things to do in college than play video games and eat pizza. And, you know, I'm not against video games and pizza. I'm not, you know, some grumpy curmudgeon. But they're tragic replacements for catechism, that is, biblical teaching and spiritual formation. So we need to look at the way we're doing that. Another aspect is parental involvement. You know, I think there was kind of an old mentality that, hey, I can bring my kids, drop them off to church, and let the professionals make them into good Christians. That's a fantasy. That's never going to happen. What happens in the home 24/7 is not going to compete with what happens 2 hours on a Friday night, or 1 hour on a Friday or on a Sunday morning. So we need to get rid of that idea and really integrate the efforts of youth workers and parents to form young people into authentic followers of Jesus.
In the vein of amusement, the mentality that brought that revolution into youth ministry didn't stop there. It's actually found its way into, I guess we could call it, adult ministry or regular ministry. A lot of churches are essentially kind of youth group for grown-ups in some with regard to the entertainment aspects of it. Do you think that young people say, come on, there has to be something more? That was when I was young. I've grown up, I've put away childish things, but the church doesn't seem to be offering me anything more, or not much more, than I had when I was in that holding tank with pizza.
Sure, that's a huge problem. And I think, they realize that maybe even when they're, you know, when they try out church as young adults or late teens, once they get past that youth group phase, they realize there's not a whole lot there in the way of depth. And we've seen studies recently that show some of these seeker churches, which have the best of intentions, and that is to, you know, introduce people to Jesus Christ. And yet, once a person's been there for 2-3 years in a seeker church, they go, I need to go deeper. And so what they get is the revolving door phenomenon, where they have no retention and they lose people continually. And I'm sure it's no different with young adults. Another problem is that when a young adult or a teenager is connected to the youth group primarily instead of the broader church, once they age out of that ministry, a And, you know, this is what we do a great job of in the church, right, is isolating, identifying age groups, life phases, and then we make a ministry for that.
Yeah, we segregate.
We segregate them, exactly. So we have things for junior high and high school and singles and marrieds and college. And but the problem is, you're right, we kind of get this segregated model of ministry where people are primarily connected to a ministry, and once their life changes, once they get married or age out of a particular ministry or their interests shift, then they're no longer connected to the larger church body. One of the interesting things to come out of the research of Christian Smith, a prominent sociologist who's looked very carefully at this trend of young people's spirituality, is that the number one predictive factor of whether or not a young person is going to retain his or her faith is if they have intergenerational connections. That is, if they have a relationship with an older, mature Christian. Because what that does then, once they lose that connection to their youth group, they still have a connection to the church. And so that's something tangible that churches can do, pairing up older people with each teenager. And because the youth pastor can't have, you know, a deep relationship with every one of them often, but if they have a connection to that older adult, that is a tremendous advantage.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, I'm curious. This generation has also been marketed to so intensely. They've been sold, upsold, oversold. They've got 100-plus channels, and most of it's marketing something to them. They're cynical about this. They can see marketing coming a mile away. They know when they're being sold something. They know when, well, a technique is being used on them, a strategy is being pulled on them. Are these young people who have left church, are they cynical? Are they suspicious of a church that has adopted these very marketing methods for the last several decades? We'll see what Drew Dick has to say about that, talking about young adults and their exodus from the church.
Whether you are just starting or have played your entire life, Oak Brook Golf Club in Edwardsville is your home for golf. Our 27-hole layout, fair prices, and award-winning staff, and ever-improving course conditions make your decision easy. We have always been family-owned at Oak Brook, and golf is our business. Our PGA staff offers leagues, instruction, camps, a senior scramble, and our family special where kids play free. Oak Brook Golf Club, 618-656-5600 or oakbrookgc.com.
How does error find its way into the church? I've written an article in the latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal titled From Exception to Rule, How Error Replaces Truth in the Church, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jordan Cooper details his journey from Calvinism to Lutheranism. The latest Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about young adults and their exodus from the church on this Wednesday afternoon, June the 8th. Drew Dick is our guest, managing editor of Leadership Journal, published in Carroll Stream, Illinois, and author of the new book, Generation X Christian. Drew, I wonder, with this generation having been marketed to so intensely, sold everything all the time, are they suspicious of a church that has adopted marketing methods for the last three decades?
Definitely. I really believe, and this is controversial, that the kind of mega church model, especially where the values of professionalism, you know, being really polished, are prominent, is really a baby boomer phenomenon. And that's not bad. I think, you know, the people who you know, launched a lot of these mega churches 10, 20, 30 years ago were missionaries, and they contextualize, as every generation has to do, they contextualize the gospel for their generation. But young people, you've hit the nail on the head. They are very suspicious, perhaps, you know, because they've seen a lot of the breakup of the family that's engendered some cynicism, perhaps, like you said, because of the barrage of messages they've received from media from the time that they're young has made them cynical and rightly suspicious of the messages that come at them 24/7. But they've rejected that sort of functional affluence that you see in your typical mega church or seeker-sensitive church, and that does not resonate with them. And so we need to find new ways of reaching this generation, and it's not just going to be in the context of a very professionally run large church. They're not impressed by that. You know, someone has said that the 20-somethings, the millennials, as they're sometimes called, they are more impressed by authenticity than expertise. And I think that that is certainly not the case with older generations, with the boomers, with the builders. So they want to see not a polished performance, but someone who's vulnerable, transparent, authentic. And that's the kind of thing that, that connects with them. And this is a great encouragement, by the way, because a lot of older people, I think, are intimidated when it comes to reaching out to loved ones that are younger, that have disavowed their Christian faith or walked away from the church. And they think, well, I'm not cool enough, you know. And we've all seen the pastor who thinks to be, you know, relevant, he has to go out and get a faux hawk and a tattoo and wear skinny jeans. And kids just kind of laugh at that because they can spot a phony. They don't care about that. They want you to be who you are, and it doesn't matter if you're not hip, as long as you care about them and as long as you're, you know, genuinely interested in their life. And you don't have to be a Bible scholar or a philosopher either to answer all their questions. You just got to be the kind of person that wants to go to coffee with them and say, hey, listen, how you doing? What's going on? What kind of struggles are you facing right now? And I think that that goes a long way, because I know when I heard the stories of young people who had left the faith, so often what happened, what went wrong, happened in the context of relationship. There was a broken relationship. Something happened in the home or in the church that precipitated that break from the faith. And so if that's going to be restored, if that's going to be reversed, it's going to happen in the context of relationship again. It's not that they're going to hear, you know, an incredible worship band or an amazing slick preacher. It's probably going to be the slow, hard work of a dedicated father or mother or friend or brother or sister or pastor that reaches out to them, you know, builds bridges of trust to see them come back.
You mentioned Christian Smith a few minutes ago, and he says we have a generation of therapeutic moralists, deists at the very best. Mm-hmm. And that particular spirituality, if you can call it that, fits nicely with a lot of the far more toxic religious ideas of our day. You mentioned in the middle of your book the neo-paganism, that, look, you can be a neo-pagan and be a therapeutic moralist deist if you want to be. It's a possibility. Talk about that influence and that way of thinking that is so common among young people today.
Yeah, well, yeah, moralistic therapeutic deism, an admittingly very clunky term that Christian Smith coined and nevertheless found its way into the vernacular of youth workers, youth ministers, people that are concerned about this topic, because I think that there was this automatic recognition that, yeah, that unfortunately this is the kind of spirituality we've engendered, and it's kind of this, yeah, God is this divine bellhop who's going to do my bidding if I'm good. So I have to be moral, and it's pretty utilitarian, yet it bears so little resemblance to the God that we encounter in Scripture. So that's very disconcerting. And you're right, there are so many cultural the spirits of our age, if you will, that really predispose us to a consumeristic kind of approach to religion. So, you know, a lot of people have marveled or been horrified by how free young people feel to pick and choose their religious beliefs. You know, I'll have a little bit from an Eastern religion, maybe reincarnation. I like Jesus. I like this kind of spirituality. I have some pagan ideas mixed in. And this also may be kind of the dark legacy of a philosophical movement called emotivism, and that is this idea that my opinions have value simply because I passionately hold them. You know, we've heard people say these kind of nonsensical statements like, you know, just as long as you believe something with all your heart, then, you know, that's great. Well, does it matter what you believe? Apparently not, as long as you believe it ardently. And, of course, even though that breaks down very quickly under any sort of scrutiny, it's sort of an implicit belief that a lot of young people hold. And, you know, neo-paganism, as you mentioned, that is just, you know, this resurgence of paganism, Wicca being the most prominent one, is a sort of religion, if you can call it that, or spirituality that dovetails perfectly with our me-centered society, because I can choose the gods and goddesses with which I want to interact and worship. I am a goddess or a god. You know, these kind of ideas are very, very compatible with a lot of the ideas that are floating around in this generation, and that truth is very malleable, and you can kind of shape God or the gods into your image. So, yeah, that's very dangerous, of course, and completely irreconcilable with Christian doctrine, and of course, just the fact that doctrine's become such a dirty word is another indication of this kind of prevailing mood in our society. So, yeah, we're up against a lot of challenges from the culture.
I'm curious, with only about a minute here, what you make of one of the solutions that people have offered, and that is kind of the emergent or the emergence movement, which has the personal authenticity thing down pat. They really do. We're talking about a group of very sincere people. But objective truth is in very short supply in some corners of that movement. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a mixed bag. Like you said, they do have some things right when it comes to being authentic and not placing a premium on performance and being polished. And that's a move in the right direction. But it's a balancing act because at the same time, you don't want to water down the truth. We've seen, you know, and in my opinion, this is controversial, perhaps, but many many proponents of the emerging church movement have kind of gone back to old German liberalism, where, you know, Jesus is kind of moral exemplar more than Son of God, and we don't want to go down that route. We've seen that fail in the mainline churches in this country, some of which have seen their numbers cut in half in the last 20 years. No one wants a religion that's really just an ideology that is devoid of any supernatural elements. So that's the wrong tack to take. Not only is it not faithful to Scripture, but it's not effective. So the emerging church, unfortunately, I don't see as the answer to this. I think it's going to be regular, uncool Christians. First of all, becoming aware about this trend and being intentional about reaching out to young people and investing in their lives.
With only 30 seconds, what basic thing do we need to rethink about youth ministry in order to not repeat the problem that we've made for ourselves with young adults?
Well, I'll just name a couple quick things, and I've alluded to them already, but we need to get parents more involved. They're the primary faith influencers, as people have said, and that's absolutely true. So we can't act as if the youth ministry is going to do it all. We need to tone down the entertainment. You know, it's okay to have a little entertainment, but we got to make sure that we're teaching these kids, giving them a foundation for their beliefs, making them understand why they believe, what they believe before they get out of youth ministry. And we need to be emphasizing spiritual formation and not just, you know, a spiritual high at a weekend youth rally, but real spiritual formation.
Drew Dickey is managing editor of Leadership Journal, published in Carroll Stream, Illinois. He's author of the book Generation X Christian, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Faith and How to Bring Them Back. You can read an article that he's written titled Red Bull Gospel, under the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Drew, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
What does the church owe its youth? What does the church have to offer its youth that the world doesn't have? One thing, and that's it. Just one thing. Jesus. Jesus Christ crucified for sinners. And with that in mind, the church ought to be doing what the church has done for millennia, giving its young people, its children, its young adults, something to grow into rather than out of. And that is, as the Apostle Peter says, from pure spiritual milk, the meat of the word, and through it all, the message of Jesus Christ for sinners. This is what they need. They need it now when they're young. They'll need it later when they're old, and it's the only thing the church has to give them. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.